In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And I want to warn you in advance, Mike, and everybody listening in advance, I am having a lot of sinus congestion right now. No, I do not have the Rona.
That's good.
I just literally, there's like weird sinus things going on here in the Northern Valley of California. It's been messing with me heavy. So
it's crazy windy right now. And
it is.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And I'm having... I wake up with a little bit of no throat stuff that goes away by midday, but that's because I'm prone to allergies, so it's not really much that I can do about it.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with that. It would be helpful if you had a soul to kind of block some of that allergy.
Yeah, maybe that might help. That might help. All the ones I've eaten so far, though, they don't really do it for me. I guess it's got to be mine.
Yeah, yeah. You need to have
that's the way
own.
That's supposed
and
to
when
work.
When you're born without one, there's not much you can do.
All right. Well,
doesn't
well, I
matter
guess
how
it's
many
just
others
a,
you consume.
That's a problem that I'm just going to have to unlive with.
Yeah, I guess. I don't think there's a ritual for that one like there is for casting demons and stuff out.
Yeah. Is there a soul absorption ritual that? Or
that actually helps with yeah. with that kind of stuff? No. I mean, there probably is for anybody but someone like you. But,
short end of the stick. Man.
I know. I'm sorry with the prejudice to you. I really am. I apologize for it. I mean, it's still a bad prejudice and we're trying to be better people, when it comes to those type of things. But I guess it's the one that I'm allowed to have because I only have like a portion of my soul. Some of it isn't there. So, I have a little bit of ginge in the minge, so I do have it there. So, yeah.
Understood. Yeah. Well,
anybody wondering what we're talking about? Of course, go on to YouTube after you've listened to us. Well, maybe you'll be on YouTube listening to us and check out a Australian comedian / musician Tim Minchin.
Oh, is that the guy?
Check out Tim Minchin. Check out his song Prejudice.
Yes,
and watch it with friends, just because they're going to think it's one thing and it's not, and then they'll love it, and then they'll sing it all the time. But anyway, and then watch it with your friends that have red hair. Then it becomes even more funny.
Yes.
But anyway, today that's not what we're supposed to be talking about. Today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different, something that's kind of inspired by last week's conversation, which was a fairly serious conversation, but at the same time, I talked about something I loved, Dungeons and Dragons, and still do love. I mean, I still have all my dice, I still have books, although my most recent books are third edition, not fifth edition. Just because I'm not ready to upgrade yet. My brain isn't, I have too much in there already. I don't need more stuff in my brain. They've changed a few things and supposed to be making it easier, but there's still, while there are some things that I can kick the crotchety old man out of my brain and say progress is good, there are other things like, but I learned all this stuff and I know how to do it this way. Why do I have to learn a new way? Why can't we just go back to the old way? But we can't go back to the old ways all the time because, one, they weren't always the best. In fact, sometimes they really weren't the best.
Oh, yes.
I mean, seriously, have you ever looked at recipes from, like, the 1950s, like the post-war years here in the United States?
Oh, my, no.
Once they figured out the beauty of how to use gelatin, which if people don't know what gelatin is, if you like Jell-O but don't know what it's made from, what gelatin comes from, don't find out. Really don't find out. And if you are vegan, don't eat Jell-O at all. Just don't do it. If you don't know better, hopefully you do. But don't find out what gelatin is because it might ruin Jell-O for you. It doesn't for me, but it might for you. But yeah, recipes from back then. You have canned meats because they learned how to really can meat good. Especially with things like Spam. If you don't know about that, guess what? We did a podcast about it, so go find it. They canned meat. They were able to get gelatin to work and be stable and sell it in a powder, which made it really, really easy for the housewives to use as they were being forced back into the house when their men came back from war, instead of working like they had been doing during wartime. Now you gals can't work anymore. Go back in the house. You know, here, we'll give you stuff to cook so you feel like you're doing something, just like you did when you were out working. But this time you're not making any money and your husband's your boss.
How positive.
I know it is. It is. It is. It's a, hey, that's, you know, that's when America was great. Right. and so, you know, you had gelatin, you had canned meat, and you had, mayonnaise, which previous to that, mayonnaise was more something that people would make on their own. Cause it's just oil, egg whites, whip it up a whole lot. But you have the mass production of mayonnaise in jars and cans that are shelf stable. And the recipe books that they had then were god awful. The things that they would combine, that they would put meat inside Jell-O, which actually kind of makes sense. But when you know what gelatin is, but the actual observance of it and right. the attempt to eat it is just wrong. It's just wrong.
No, it's like
I mean, they do it with like head cheese.
Are they putting meat in like fruit flavored Jell-O, or what are they putting it in?
Well, like it would even be non flavored Jell-O, which is just even worse. Because like fruit flavored Jell-O, oh, at least so it's just nothing
but
the
yeah.
Is.
There's like no taste at all. It's just nothing but gelatinous consistency and then meat in there.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. Like
because
none.
Because that time in America did not make any sense. The combinations of things that they would do did not make any
There's
sense.
There's a lot
at
of
all.
Things that don't make sense. There's a lot of bad decisions we've made as a country when it comes to traditions.
Well, and what happens to these bad decisions when it's realized that they're bad decisions? When the public at large is like, yep, yeah, nope, we're not okay with this anymore. What happens to these things? The people say something about it, right?
Essentially,
boycotts
yes.
happen. Campaigns to remove something happen, and some of these things linger. Some of them disappear. Why? Because the people have spoken, and occasionally the people are listened to. But the people have spoken. They have said, "No, this is not something we're okay with. This is not something that we like."
Just in case anybody actually needs a pointer specifically about what we're talking about the history of disco.
No, but that works. Although honestly, I love disco. So
really. You can't look at everything that you just said and not think of the whole disco sucks movement of like 1978, 1980.
No, okay. Now you're right. The whole disco sucks movement is definitely that's definitely within the same thing I'm talking about. I mean, I disagree with it because I like disco, but you're right. The majority of culture is like, no, we can't stand it anymore. Let's take a bunch of records and burn them in a ballpark somewhere. you know. So, and that's America's way of handling things that they don't like is like, we don't like this thing. Let's set it on fire
or destroy it in public somehow. Yeah.
I wonder if we did this first or if the Germans did this first, who was burning things first? I mean,
I love it. No, I think that's, you know what, if we were to ever rewrite history, it was just a bunch of dudes like, this tea sucks, and they just throw it into the river. Like, all of American history, every American movement is just, we just destroyed something in public.
Well, I mean, heck, I even remember when a drummer for a rock band was like, hey, hold on, we need to be getting paid for the music that we make, even though we're, like, super, super rich anyway, and whatnot, and... Even though eventually this really won't matter because we're not going to get any money for the music that we make, and the only way we're going to get money is by charging like $70 a ticket for concert tickets where we play the same like 15 songs each time and people love it because we've convinced them that they're the best band, that we're the best band ever. And they also will buy a bunch of our merch and stuff because we're going to slap our name on everything. Thank you, Gene, for that idea.
Oh my God, I thought you were talking about Metallica for a minute.
I was.
Oh, I thought you said Gene. Okay, so you weren't talking about Kiss. Because you totally could apply that to Kiss.
This was Lars thanking Gene for the idea of slapping names on everything.
I was going to say, I don't think Peter Chris said anything like that, but...
No. This is me pretending that Lars is thanking Gene, okay?
He probably did.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, this hypothetical, I'm doing finger quotes, hypothetical drummer for a rock band decides years before file sharing would be a big thing to get mad when the first set of file sharing happens. And how does the public respond? We're going to take your CDs and run them over with a steamroller, because that's going to do something.
Didn't they have to buy them first?
Yes, they did, which is just, or they had the ones that they had already bought. And here's the sad part about it. They had bought these CDs. They were mad at Metallica for doing this.
Right.
And so they run the CDs over. But like back then, it would have been really, really difficult for them to have saved any of that music on a computer somewhere.
Right.
So they would eventually, if they ever wanted to hear it again, either listen to the radio or eventually pay to download it or download it for free. One of the two,
right?
At some point or another in the future. But you know, Lars Ulrich becomes one of the most hated people in rock music, which is funny. He was just the main public face of it. There were many, many, many bands behind that, and didn't matter because, again, the people that spoke, they all hated Lars Ulrich as a result of it. And he had years of dealing with that hate, living in his cushy mansion with like $135 million worth of art all over the wall.
South Park made the most brilliant reference to this. Did you ever see this? Where they were talking about like music downloading or something like that being a big deal. And so I can't remember who it is. It's very Ghost of Christmas Past kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And all the kids go to Lars Ulrich and he's sitting in the backyard of his mansion next to his giant pool. And he's just crying in a chair. With his sunglasses and his brilliant, beautiful pool or whatever, and like all this other shit going down. He's sitting there crying. They're like, who's that? That's Lars Ulrich. Why is he crying? Why, it's because all this music is being downloaded and he can't afford his third yacht or something like that. I can't remember what the freaking joke was.
Yeah, I remember the episode, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the most brilliant references in South Park they ever made. They've ripped on Metallica multiple times.
As much as you and I both have great love for the music that the band has made, the people in the band, specifically two of the people in the band, have not necessarily come off in the public spotlight as some of the most what's the words I want to use to say it appropriately and then to not have them refuse to ever talk to us if we ever get the chance to meet them and hear this.
Well, look, Lars is completely at peace with being one of the most hated people in rock and roll, and he constantly jokes about it. He knows what he did made him one of the most hated people ever.
Well, but that's only the small part. I mean, I'm only thinking that's only the small part of the whole Napster thing. He does come off as kind of an entitled, you know, douche with a Napoleon complex. He may not be that way to his friends, but that's how his public persona comes off. And you know, James Hetfield comes off as kind of a giant meathead who just wants to shoot animals and, you know, drink a lot of alcohol. So, and he's done both to great degree in his life.
Well, yeah, and that was a running joke for both of them for quite some time.
And I'm not saying they haven't done amazing things. They're All Within My Hands thing is amazing, and they haven't done amazing things. But here's part of the thing: when you are in the public eye like that, when you are a celebrity like that, every little thing that you do is going to be watched. Every little thing that you do is going to be questioned. And there's always kind of been a thing of celebrities that they're under this critical eye. Mm-hmm. And when things happen that are, you know, maybe missteps that the celebrities have, they say the wrong thing, they do the wrong thing, they're found in a car parked on the side of the road with, you know, transvestite hookers, and that's the wrong thing. At least that's what they claim it is. It's the wrong thing. Maybe it was the right thing. I'm looking at you, Hugh Grant. You remember that from back in the day?
Hugh Grant, and wasn't Eddie Murphy one of them too?
Yeah, but I almost more expect it from Eddie Murphy than Hugh Grant. Anyway, the point I'm making is when Hugh Grant had that issue, when he was caught like that, big public outcry. And back in the day, they'd end up going on some late night show and doing the whole mea culpa and this and that.
Which is bullshit because he shouldn't have had to apologize for it anyway. But
should he have? Let me get to that.
As far as the base information that I know, he should not have. But I don't know.
Well, no, hold on.
I don't have full information on the situation, so.
Hold on.
Okay. Yeah. Please continue.
Here's the thing. when you think about it, like I Hugh Grant was a good example, and again, Eddie Murphy I think is a pretty decent example, because when you look at the two personas that they place, and yes, I want to make sure that and be very clear, I'm not speaking about race in this. I'm speaking about the personas. You have Hugh Grant, who plays in his movies the kind of dopey, foppish. He tries to be an everyman, but he's like this adorable, cute, bumbling everyman, right?
Right.
Hugh Grant's character that he portrayed with all the movies he did and the kind of public persona that he had, he's this nice guy. You know, shy, but he's a nice guy, right?
I mean, he plays, yeah, you mean as the guy that he plays in most, like he's typecast as the nice guy.
But that was the public persona that he also put forth. Eddie Murphy,
right.
Never that type of public persona. This guy gets up to do his stand-up shows in a red leather suit, and he's cussing left and right and doing all these things, talking about all kinds of sexual stuff. What I'm referring to here is the persona that he had at the time. Eddie Murphy was edgy and dangerous, right?
Yeah, total bad boy kind of dude. You know?
So to find Eddie Murphy parked on the side of the road with a prostitute, that's like, yeah, okay, we kind of expect that of Eddie Murphy. That's just his persona. He has that public persona.
I mean, hadn't he settled down, though, and did, like, the Family Man thing after a while? Because he ended up having a divorce and, like, all this kind of stuff after that, didn't he?
He's got 10 children from, like, 4 different wives. So, okay. He's never fully settled down. But that's the point is, even if he did, he's still – the persona that he had was still this edgy persona.
Right.
Hugh Grant's persona was this squeaky clean, you know, good little boy, good little British boy who has trouble speaking to women. And boom, he's found in a car. And that's why it was such a shocking thing.
Right.
There was a big backlash from it at the time. Huge backlash
right,
from
right,
it.
Right, yep.
Again, he had to go on one of the shows, apologize for everything, saying he was sorry for letting people down, because people had this image of him in his mind, or in their mind. And he cultivated this image. This is what made him the draw, the not quite sex symbol, because he really wasn't necessarily a sex symbol. Women weren't necessarily imagining him like they do Jason Momoa or Joe, whatever his last name is, Mangello, Joe Mangello.
Joe Manganiello, yeah.
Yeah, the women aren't fantasizing or Channing Tatum. They're not thinking about the washboard abs or anything. I guarantee Hugh Grant has probably never had washboard abs in his life. They're thinking about it more of, this is the guy they want to cuddle up on the couch with, and that they want to go, you know, to a picnic in the park with, and that kind of thing. This
right.
serves as that emotional anchor that they're looking for,
right.
Not necessarily the sexual anchor that they're looking for. That was reserved at that time for, like, Mel Gibson's ass in Lethal Weapon 1.
right.
But the point being here is, this is something that was cultivated, and he had to, when all this went down, he had to come out and do this apology to try to make things right with his fans, with these people that basically made him have the career that he has and put him in the public spotlight by being fans of his.
Right.
And he understood that while he, like you said, he maybe shouldn't have had to apologize for his own personal behavior, he had to, in the sense that these people paying to see his movies, wanting to have more movies with him, making him a draw, they made his life possible. If these people don't pay to see his movies, this new modern age of these epic movie stars, musical stars, in a sense that we've had, yes, they've had actors and actresses and musicians for, you know, hundreds of years, that we have, you know, we still have music from all these great musicians. We have written accounts of various actors that used to act back in England during Shakespearean times. Like, we have accounts of actors that used to act back in ancient Greece doing some of the original plays that we have information of existing in ancient Greece. I mean, the first written plays that we have record of are from that time period, from playwrights like Aristophanes and stuff. And we have accounts of certain actors playing certain things. So we've had this kind of celebrity before. In ancient Rome, you had it with the gladiators. Gladiators were celebrities very much akin to our professional wrestling celebrities nowadays.
Right.
But to the level that they are now, with the way that the world kind of exists now, you know, with the way that media exists with film, with music, the way that it permeates our culture.
Yeah.
The way that sports permeate our culture. These celebrities have become even higher profile, even bigger than they ever were before.
That and a legacy can last a lot longer with them as well.
In some cases, yes, because we have the ability to keep the things in ways that people can still experience them. When you're an actor doing plays on a stage, if somebody doesn't see you do the play, all they can do is read about your performance. When you're an actor doing film, people can watch that film over and over and over as long as there's some media that film is on, some way for them to be able to reach it. So it does give them the ability to have something even more overarching than ever was before. The thing about this is, part of this has to do with technology. A good portion of it has to do with technology, the ability for people to see this all around the world. You may have had people that were better athletes than, say, we'll pick probably somebody who's regarded as one of the best to ever play a specific sport. Michael Jordan, right?
Okay.
Probably considered one of the best, if not the best basketball player ever.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to the celebrity status that he is at and doesn't have the massive amount of money that he has, most of it from endorsements and products, not necessarily from his time playing, but the products and endorsements he got based on his celebrity, based on the way people would buy things that he was involved in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Right. He wouldn't have that if it wasn't for the way that society is now, with media, with, you know, advertisements blaring in your face, with the culture that has created. And he came up as a part of that culture and used it to the best of his advantage to be obscenely wealthy.
Oh yeah,
and definitely. Hey, I'm not knocking him for making the best out of what he needed to in his own personal gifts.
Oh, of course not.
He had gifts in something and he made the best out of it. But here's the thing: many celebrities, and he's one. Again, we're talking Michael Jordan's near the pinnacle as far as money and influence and all of that is concerned. But you can go through the litany of musicians, actors, sports people who their very existence and the money that they make and the jobs that they do and the lifestyle that they live is based solely on their celebrity status. And that is based on what the people think about them, the people, the general population, what they think, what they're willing to invest the money into to make them what they are, make these celebrities who and what they are. When this happened to Hugh Grant back then, and happened to many other celebrities back then, during our time growing up, you would see the backlash. You would see them lose jobs, right?
Yeah.
You would see them lose contracts for things. You know, endorsements would step away from them. And they would have to do an apology tour of some type and work their way back into everybody's good graces before anybody was willing to give them any kind of props anymore, you know, give them any kind of respect anymore. And this is kind of how things went. And we've talked many times before. In fact, part of the basis of this whole podcast is how, even from our childhood, media changed so rapidly. So many of those things changed. The access of the media, how quickly we get the news, and our ability to interact with celebrities, our ability to interact with the news, our ability to interact with everything increased a millionfold with the invention of the internet and our connectivity to the internet.
Yeah.
Now we can follow these celebrities on Twitter and comment. We can become mini celebrities ourselves. I mean, we can't, at least I can't. You and your other endeavors, you get way more celebrity status than I do. But anyway, point being, poor James.
Not at all. I don't personally feel that that's the case. I mean, that's,
hey, let me have my moment of self-deprecation, okay? It's what I do. It's my humor.
Okay.
Point being, it's to me, it's funny. I'm laughing on the inside.
Okay, good.
That's because I'm crying on the outside. Anyway, that's supposed to make you laugh. Damn it, jokes aren't working.
No, it's okay. You got it. Like we're part way. I was mid laugh on that one.
Nice. I just the brain's moving too fast.
It's all good.
Anyway, point.
I know how that feels.
You do. Moving on. as I was saying,
yeah,
we have this deeper connectivity to this entire world of this than what we had before, because it used to be back with the Hugh Grant thing, people would have to write in letters and make phone calls and have to be interviewed by the, you know, news people, what do you think about this? What do you think about hearing about what Hugh Grant did? I think it's terrible. You know, yada, yada, yada. They had to have somebody come to us for it, or we had to do a lot more to get the information out. Now, we pull out our phones, type a few things, boom. And this has become almost, instead of it just being, you know, the old, let's get a boycott together or let's express what we feel about something. No, this has become something else. This has become something bigger. This has become, in a sense, its own culture and has a name. You know what that name is, right?
I think I know what that name is, yes.
What's the name, Mike? Is the brain moving fast enough?
Let's see. Brain moves too fast, sir. I think you were kind of getting to this about a minute or two ago. But yeah, you're talking about what's called cancel culture?
What is called cancel culture. And here's the thing. Like many things, people think this is something new. But it's not. This is something that's been going on for a long time. The only new thing about this is the way that an individual like you or me or anybody that you know who was unfortunate enough to be named Carl, any of those people have the ability to just hop on a computer and hop on their phone and have their voice be heard in a way that before it would take much bigger masses to be heard. And you were more faceless when you were heard. Now, when you speak, people can see your face. People can see your name. People can connect to it more. And this is something even different. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more of this, how this modern cancel culture is working, and how I'm going to say how it's my feelings on the celebrity response to this.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thexennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we're back, because all right. Apparently we weren't canceled yet. and so here's the thing. Like I said, this is we're shifting into the modern version of the boycott, really. That's what this is. This is the modern version of boycotting a product, boycotting a person. It's cancel culture. And it's called that because basically the way that it's used nowadays is if this celebrity or company or pseudo celebrity even does something. We'll get into the something in a minute, but does something fans or the public in general doesn't like, the response is typically within social media to use the word cancel to basically say, I'm done with you. You're done.
Yeah, I just,
and that's kind of where the name of it comes from. The titling of it is, that's where it's why it's called the cancel culture,
right?
Is because that's what's used to do this. Again, modern, one word now equivalent of a boycott. No more writing letters, no more making a bunch of phone calls, no more gathering up in protest. This is one word, cancel, and you're done.
Yeah, except, hold on, isn't the word boycott literally the same thing as the word cancel? They're both two-syllable words that can say the same. They say the same thing.
Yeah, the difference is you didn't just say boycott, you actually had to physically do it. All that people actually do now is just type the word cancel in.
Okay, wait a minute.
Twitter.
Hold on. Facebook. Well, I mean,
now, hold on.
People okay, call hold on, hold on. For the cancel, but what's the okay, yes. So I've got let's if I may, I'm not like trying to guide the conversation, but I am entirely confused between whether or not you had to physically go do something like print pamphlets or start talking to people about whether or not that was the case. That doesn't change that the fact that just because people have the capability of talking to masses and scores of people with a small device in their pocket, change the act?
It doesn't, and that's the thing.
Ah.
That's the thing about this is the way that it's being portrayed, and by a specific group of people, by the way, a specific group of people are using this term cancel culture in a specific way. They're portraying this as this new modern thing that's a problem. But it's not really a modern thing. It is literally the exact same thing as what you're saying. It is the same as the old boycotts.
Yeah, it's the same deal.
The only difference being it's far more visible and it's far easier to do. And so, because it's so much easier to do, it sometimes gains traction a lot quicker.
Yeah.
A lot quicker, because sometimes boycotts would take days and weeks and months for boycotts to happen.
Oh, yeah.
This can happen, you're right, within moments.
Yeah. You're talking literally like 100,000 people will learn that somebody was a dipshit in like the course of 2 minutes, because they get an alert on their phone because somebody they followed on Twitter shared something that, or they tweeted something. I love those. When somebody actually does it in print and
makes it completely invisible to you.
Yeah.
We're looking at you, Roseanne. And dude, here's the thing.
You want to talk about canceled. That is as canceled as you can get. That was wonderful.
They take your show away from you, rename the show, and keep it going. That's how hard you got canceled.
You got canceled so hard they killed your character in the premiere. It was amazing.
And here's the thing about that. The group that I'm talking about that's using this term cancel culture, because they're using it, they're putting a name on it to try to make it like it's something new. When it's not, it's the same damn thing. It's just more visible. It's just more accessible. It's just more immediate. It's not anything new. The people using this term, and they're using it to try to demonize this behavior, are the celebrities that are being targeted by it. And I say targeted because those are the words that they use. They're being targeted by cancel culture. Cancel culture is ruining their livelihood. Cancel culture is coming after them.
Oh, these snowflake millennials are turning around and trying to cancel me because I said something they didn't like.
Well,
that's essentially the narrative of whenever somebody uses the term cancel culture, and I don't believe in it at all as it being a legitimate, valid thing. I don't. That's like the least valid idea I can think of. There's not people grouping up just to cancel somebody because they did something they didn't like.
Well, actually, it is and it isn't. What it is...
Well, it's not... It's more valid, I would say. To clarify my statement. It's more valid than just, I don't like you. Fuck you. You're done. Like, it's not how that works. It's not that quick... I mean, it's not that... What's the term I'm trying to use here? It's not that trivial. That's it. It's not like that.
Well, so I don't know if I agree with you entirely or not. But what this is it is still a celebrity doing or saying something that their base finds in some way, shape, or form reprehensible. And their base, the people that support them, the people that put the money into them, buy their movies or their CDs or their tickets or their clothing or their whatever, the people that actually made them celebrities by investing their money and time and thoughts into these people, they are the reason that these people even have this status. And so when the celebrity does something that you feel as the fan of them is just morally wrong or unconscionable, or you just can't support and deal with that, you don't have to support them anymore. And you shouldn't have to support them anymore. You should only support who you want to support. The celebrities then are, with, again, this new technology, this ability for anybody in the world to be able to reach out and have their voice available and seen and read all over the place instantaneously. They're voicing their feelings about it. They're voicing their dislike of whatever the celebrity is doing. And the celebrity, like, they're getting whiny. They're saying, oh, you can't just do this to me because I did something that you don't like. Well, yes, they actually can, because they are what made you. The persona that you have created and cultivated to make people your fan, to have people be your fans, that's about the fans. It's not about you. And when you violate that, when you go against that, you've taken away what they're expecting from the product. You destroyed the product that you've created, in a sense. I mean, it's like I can liken it to Lucas going in and redoing episodes 4, 5, and 6, adding all the special features to it. You took something that was beautiful and we loved, and you added crap to it. How much? I mean, we got angry enough with you that we only let you make 3 more out of the 9 movies, and pressured you basically to sell it to somebody else.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're talking about as far as ruining that product. But I think that when it comes down to these types of reactions, I think it requires a much stronger statement or a much stronger alignment than ruining even your quote unquote ruining your product. And like, think about it this way. I know it's universally pretty widely accepted that the redos, that the reworks of episodes 4, 5, and 6 are pretty well frowned upon for the most part.
I shouldn't have used those as examples because I know you're going to focus on them.
Well, not necessarily. Wait it out because I have an example of a possibility of something that would be different, okay? I like what you use as an example because even though the product itself is not necessarily ruined, like, the idea of that franchise is not ruined by reworking those movies or modernizing them or whatever he felt was proper because it concentrates on the product. However, if George Lucas came out and made anti-Semitic comments, that would be a whole different ballgame. He would ruin the franchise with his person. He would go like that would be something akin to what J.K. Rowling is doing to her own book franchise right now. You know what I mean? That's a whole different.
Yeah, she's definitely somebody that's having and is complaining about the idea of cancel culture happening to her. And and you know, just for clarity's sake, a rough definition of cancel culture as it's, you know, being defined here on the internet, it's referring to the popular practice of withdrawing support for or canceling public figures and companies after they've done or said something considered objectionable or offensive. It's generally discussed as being performed on social media in the form of group shaming. And again,
this is something
that has been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Right.
Group shaming. In fact, look back to some of the movies that we used to watch. You'd have the bad guy who was this rich kid who everybody thought was wonderful until the end when your kind of semi-dorky protagonist in the movie reveals all the horrible and terrible and nasty things that the rich guy's been doing, and suddenly he's no longer cool anymore. And it's okay for him to have a cavity search by police officers on the side of the road in Illinois.
Wait, what? Hold on. What movie is this? Is this a movie?
Yeah, it's one of the endings for Wayne's World. Poor Rob Lowe. You know, and who is he? He's the rich guy who looks good, who seems like he's trying to help, but in fact, all he's trying to do is sabotage Wayne's relationship and get in somebody's pants.
Right.
That's all he's really trying to do. And I mean, this is, and what happens? He gets shamed by having a cop stick a finger in his butt. And which, you know, doesn't necessarily fly now for humor, but back then it did. Although apparently it still would fly in Japan for humor. They have some weird tradition of teenage boys sticking fingers in each other's butts. I'm not kidding. It's an actual traditional thing.
No,
that they do.
I know that. Yeah, that's actually, isn't that like a Naruto maneuver? It's fucking
I don't
weird.
Know exactly what it is, but
yeah, it's a maneuver where he literally, like, one of the guys has a move, like a special move. The move is stick both of your fingers in the opponent's butthole. It's weird as fuck. That is one of the weirdest cartoons I've ever seen before.
I have nothing to say that might not come off as culturally
insensitive. I am thrown off by it. I will tell you that.
Anyway, point being here, this is something that we saw as a trope in movies for a long time. Is you had this the popular person, the one that everybody liked, but you knew watching the movie and the protagonist knew that this person was bad, and then they got found out they were bad, and everybody stopped supporting them. Everybody wanted nothing to do with them anymore.
Right.
And so this type of reveal of this beloved person doing bad crap and then everybody just completely bailing on them, this is nothing new. This has been done in movies, it's been done in culture, it's been done in stories. This is a normal thing. The only difference now, and it said so right in the description that I had, the only difference now is the fact that it's in social media, visible for everybody to see, and it's a group shaming in social media. And so what you have is, you have these celebrity figures who feel that part of their entitlement as celebrities is the ability to say whatever they want. Well, here's the thing. And this actually becomes something that's more of a misunderstanding, I think, especially in this country, of what the ability of free speech is.
Right.
What free speech really, really is protected as.
Yeah.
And what that means, the ability to say whatever you want. Yeah. Free speech gives you the ability to say, for the most part, I mean, you can't say bomb in an airport. You can't say fire in a theater.
Right.
Those things are things you can actually be arrested for.
Right.
And with the airport thing, cavity searches again. but maybe even the same fire in a theater, you might get a cavity search for that one too. Who knows? You're trying to light a fart.
Where's the fire?
I don't know. Up your ass and to the left. but anyway, what freedom of speech grants you is the ability to say, for the most part, the things that you want to say. What it does not grant you is protection from repercussions for the things that you say. Words have meanings. So as you're a celebrity, as you're a person that's in the public spotlight, if you use certain words, if you say certain things, and then on top of words, let's throw in actions. If you do certain things, you're in the public eye. You've done things and said things in the public eye to get where you are. You know, you sang those songs. You spoke those lines. And then if you didn't speak anything, your actions did it. You played that game. You did this thing, whatever. All these things, your actions, your words, they got you in the public spotlight. You know what I mean? When you see a famous actor, are you not going to be quoting some of their lines to them? Are you not going to want them to quote them back to you?
I mean, I don't know if I'd fanboy that hard, depending. Like, part of me would be torn between wanting to do that, and then the other part would be just like, that would just be fucking stupid to have to. I know they got to get that shit all the time, right?
Let's throw Metallica back in the mix.
Yeah.
Do you seriously not want to be hanging out around Metallica and have James go, yeah? I mean, you want that. You want that moment.
But no. Okay, wait. Like, that just feels like awkward to ask them to do, or say, it's
awkward to ask them to do, but again, you want that moment.
Okay,
because that moment
I will say this. If I ever were to get into that situation, okay, and I was like, I mean, this is never going to happen. The guy stopped drinking, so I'm not going to be out at a bar and see the guy there and then not secretly want him to do that. But at the same time, like, you're just never going to ask for it. Right?
I mean,
like, that's half of it. But at the same time, it also sounds like to them, you're mindlessly pandering, or you're just kind of really trying to hold on to this celebrity that you have attached to because of that.
Well, and
that
that's
thing,
to me,
you know?
To me, that's another whole segment of things that I think leads into this same idea of the entitlement of these celebrities. You have some celebrities that will take that joke that they or that line or that thing that they made their money on, you
right.
know, they made themselves known with.
Yeah.
And they will keep doing that over and over, knowing that that's what made them what they are.
I can understand
I think that when you have that, again, personal opinion, unpopular personal opinion, when you have a band that refuses to play their most popular song because we don't like that song, we're not going to play that song. And it's like their most popular song, but they're never going to play it because they don't like it, because they've grown past that. To me, that's like fine, but you have to deal with the backlash that comes with the fact that you're not going to play the song that everybody literally wants to hear you play. If you're fine dealing with the backlash, great. And the band I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of this is actually fine dealing with the backlash of not playing that favorite song of everybody else's. They're like, okay, fine. You don't like us because we won't play that song. We're okay with that.
Look,
there
dude,
are other fans
Hanson
who
has
like
moved
us.
On from Mbop, okay? You don't need to keep begging them for it.
Actually, Hanson would play Mbop in a second.
They totally
if they were
would. Yeah,
to.
They don't even
they
care.
They totally
but
would,
yeah.
And I applaud them for it, because they'd just be like, this is what you want. This is what we're going to give you. And you have a band like Metallica who literally plays, you know, every time you go and see them in concert, there are like five songs you will always hear. They will never not play these five songs.
Yeah.
The band I was referring to is Radiohead, who refuses to play the song Creep.
Oh, that's fun.
They refuse to. They won't have anything to do with that song. That is their most popular song as far as like multiple countries, especially in America, sold the most singles, that kind of thing. It was and highest
right.
charting of any of their singles. They refuse to play it because they hate the song. They don't feel that it sounds like their sound. And
it doesn't.
I give them,
like, have you listened to any Radiohead albums outside of that, like, it doesn't sound like them at all.
I know, but and that's the thing I can give them props for is they say they won't play it. The backlash came, and they're like, all right, if you don't like us and don't want to come to our concerts because we don't play it, okay, that's your choice, and we're perfectly fine with that. They didn't have you don't have a right to say that. You don't have a right to be angry. They're like, hey, if you're angry about it, that's cool. We're still not going to play it. We're going to play what we want to play. And do they have maybe less fans than they could have? Do they have – I mean, they still have a huge fan base, and that's great.
Yeah.
But did they lose some fans? Did they have people get mad at them for it? Yes. They took it in stride. They didn't whine about it. They just said, hey, this is what we're going to do. Well, you're okay to not like it, and that's perfectly fine.
I've got a question for you on that. Like, how many of those fans are straight-up fans of their actual material in the band and themselves, or are they fair-weather fans due to one hit?
Does it matter?
I mean, I would consider it, too. Like, that depends on, like, the same people that would – that's the same people that would go to – I don't know. I'm trying to find an equivalent. That's like, boy, I really can't find a full equivalent to that. That's like going to a Metallica concert and being pissed that they don't play Enter Sandman one night. You know what I mean?
Well,
they always play it, and that's regardless.
But the thing is, if they didn't play it at a show, it would be heard about. Something would be said about it.
True. And that's the agreement that they've come to themselves to be able to play that because they know that they need to. They know that they want to play that staple.
Exactly.
That's part of their agreement. But that doesn't mean that them not. Dude, the amount of music that they have is gargantuan.
Well, and I understand that. But you what I'm saying is, you have bands that you do have groups. You have bands. You have performers who they'll do the thing that they get that got them their bread and butter, the thing that set them up.
Right.
And then they don't want to do it anymore and get mad when the public is not okay with that. Well, this is what set you up. This is what made you into a celebrity. You still were an artist, but come on, Mike, you and I both know there are many, many artists who create amazing art, be it through acting, be it through any kind of visual art that they create, be it through music. They are great artists, people that you have known and seen create art, that never end up being any kind of a celebrity. For every amazing musician that you've encountered in your life, mm-hmm. there's something like Smash Mouth, who makes insipid songs that end up being on repeated on animated films and mocked and parodied for years, and yet they, for at least their Andy Warhol moment, had that little bit of fame and were relevant for a short period of time, far more than some of the people that you may know who are much more dedicated artists, maybe have created art that has been much more moving to you or even to other people, mm-hmm. but not in a way that caused them to have any kind of celebrity status. And that's the thing is, it's celebrity is really weird in the sense that it is not really a benchmark for, it's not always a benchmark for somebody's actual ability at anything. It's just the benchmark for how many people like that person, how many people are interested in that person's stuff, how much interest they attract. It doesn't necessarily have any relevance on their actual physical ability or the product they produce. Now, I'm not saying that some of them don't produce some amazing product, don't have some amazing abilities, but the status as a celebrity is not the indicator as to whether they are that good. You know what I'm saying? Make sense?
I guess. I'm a little torn on the concept, but I guess I could understand that. Yeah.
Okay. Here, example for you. If you were to have random people who just listen to music, list off like top 10 guitarists of all time, mm-hmm. you'd get guitarists from bands that have had, you know, major records that have sold big mm-hmm. that are from popular bands, right?
Yep.
Now, if you were to go through and ask a bunch of actual working musicians, top 10 guitarists of all time, you're going to get a completely different list. You might have one, maybe two people on the list that are the same, but you're going to get a different list.
Yeah,
because
totally.
Oftentimes you're going to get from the people that are in the industry, the people that actually have true artistic ability, that are really doing something
right.
unique and different. Whereas when you're dealing with the general public, they're looking at the thing that has become popular, the thing that is in their face, the thing that they see the most. It's not necessarily always the best.
Right.
It's just the one that has the most draw and the most attention to it.
Okay.
So all of this, this celebrity is based on the attention that you get from the people, the persona that you craft from this attention. So when you do something that doesn't make the people happy, there's going to be a backlash. And again, what we're looking at is we're looking at this term of cancel culture being used as a way to describe the anger, the frustration that many of these celebrities are feeling from, honestly, having people call them on the things that they do, having people hold them accountable, and as a result, they can't have the entitlement that they expect to be able to have, that many of them kind of exist with, you know? They're going to do their thing, and they're not going to be questioned about it until suddenly they are, and it's, why are you doing this? You're canceling me. You're making it so I can't make my living. Well, you've taken that persona that these people are investing all this money into, this time and this energy, and you've given them something different. You've given them something that is not what they want. So there's consequences. You know, there are consequences for the things that you do. And this is nothing new. This has been how it's been for, I mean, look at, again, you can look back, like we said in the beginning, like I used as the example in the beginning, the Hugh Grant story. You can look back to the hit that Geraldo Rivera got years and years ago. If anybody at all remembers who Geraldo Rivera is, when he thought he found Al Capone's vault, man, with all the stuff in it.
Yeah.
And there was absolutely nothing in there. And yep, his credibility was completely lost for years.
Yeah.
And ended up doing crappy shows. I mean, there have been actors, actresses, singers that have had the bottom fall out because of the things that they do, and the idea of I can do what I want and there shouldn't be any repercussions for it. Well, when the people that are paying your bills, the people that are making your lifestyle exist, are your fans, and you're relying on your fans to make your lifestyle exist, if you don't give them the things that they want, they're not going to keep your lifestyle going. Now, again, if you make the conscious decision to not give the fans what they want and to do your own thing, and you're okay with the hit that your lifestyle takes as a result, good on you, because at least you know the truth of the matter. And the truth of the matter is, you depend on them to maintain what you have. That's the point of being being a celebrity. If you're willing to sacrifice that because you want to do the things you believe in, and you are upfront about wanting to sacrifice it, great. And there are many artists that are that way. Like I said, Radiohead was that way. Look down at your arm, and that gives you an example of somebody that's that way. If he wanted to make the money for it, there's a lead singer who could just hop back in with his old guitarist, go on a couple of tours, and he could make more money than he could probably ever dream of.
Ah, he tried that in the 90s, and it didn't work.
Yeah, but I don't think it was. I don't think they were ready for it in the 90s. I think it'd be the nostalgia thing wasn't at the point yet. In the 90s, see, the problem is in the 90s they were trying to hit a nostalgia where the people didn't have enough money to be able to pay for it. Now, yes, we are having the economic problems we are, you know, in this country, and were it not for the coronavirus and all the lockdown that happened right now,
yeah.
I'm telling you, if Zepp was to reunite what they can reunite and do a tour, the sales on that would be astronomical. They would sell out everything. They would make millions and millions and millions of dollars, far beyond what they've already made. But he doesn't want to do it. That part of his life is over. He's done with that.
Yeah,
he doesn't sing
fully understood.
That's my knowledge. He doesn't sing any of the songs anymore.
He still does. He still sings those songs. Some of the songs he does still sing. He just sings them with his own band. But he does twists and turns and that kind of stuff. He's moved forward. The guy's in his fucking 70s, man. Like, he is moved on from what he did when he was 25.
But you can look at a contemporary of his, mm-hmm, at least of that band. You can look at a somewhat contemporary of Led Zeppelin,
mm-hmm,
in the Rolling Stones. And they are going out, when they've gone out on tour, they go out and do the same shit. and have still been going out and doing the same shit. These are two bands from the same country, from roughly the same time period, not exactly, but roughly, that have taken two completely separate approaches to it. You have one that the lead singer doesn't do any of this stuff anymore with the original band, does his own thing now, because as you say, he's moved on. And I mean, admittedly, taken possibly a giant financial hit for what he could have made if he kept doing those things. You have the other band who keeps doing the same damn shit over and over and over again.
Well,
giving the fans the thing that they want. These are two completely separate approaches.
Yeah, but the question I would have before you move on to that problem, the question I have is, are they doing it for the continued celebrity, or are they doing it because they still enjoy doing it? When's the last hit that the Rolling Stones had? Do you know they're still coming out with music? You know they have new music?
Yeah, but none of it's good.
Okay, I've got a question for you, because that in itself is subjective. Yeah, that's subjective. That subjective opinion. Do you know what the music they did on the last album was? Have you heard it?
No. I
Roots,
wasn't interested enough.
Blues. It's a blues, and I don't mean like 1-4-5 blues, okay, standard rock and roll B.B. King level stuff. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't a standard. He set the fucking standard, but that's regardless. I'm talking like some way, way, way old stuff. Guys that they made headline their shows for them, or they brought onto their shows because they became big because they idolized these guys and pulled from black music, and so they gave them a proper homage as well as they could to be able to advance themselves and the people that they drew influence from. What they're doing is they're but at the same time, they are free to make the music that they have while they turn around and fill fucking stadiums as one of the biggest selling acts still today. Well, not filling stadiums right now, but you know what? In 2019, I think they were the number two highest grossing behind Elton John, I think.
And how are they?
And they're still playing fucking Satisfaction. Don't get me wrong. They're still playing the old school shit.
That's the point, Mike. That's the point. Is the reason that they are filling these stadiums, and they were filling the stadiums and making the money that they were making, was not because they were playing their new blues stuff. It's because when people came to the stadium to listen to the Rolling Stones, they heard Satisfaction. They heard Brown Sugar, which whatever song it is that,
you
like as a Stones fan,
yeah.
You heard the songs that you wanted to hear because they played the things that the audience wanted to hear play.
That's true.
And that's the thing is, even if they're still making music and when they're playing stadiums, they're playing the old hits. There are many people who would say, and many people would think maybe I'm trying to say, these guys are sellouts because they're playing what the audience wants. No, they have made the decision that to keep making the money that they're making, which enables them to write whatever albums they want to and not necessarily have to write new music to appease people, but write what they want.
Right.
Instead, they go out to do their concerts, which is the way, by the way, that's the way bands make money nowadays. You don't make money by recording a CD and putting out a CD.
No, you do it with your live shows. Album. Yeah, for sure.
Your live shows make the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They have made the choice to make sure that when they do their live shows, it includes all of their old hits, all of the old things that they need to have in it. And so that is the business choice that they have made by playing those songs, to give themselves the longevity they have, to give themselves the lifestyle that they want to have, right?
True. If Mick Jagger needs a new hip and a third yacht, then by all means. But they're also doing it to financially sustain themselves. Yeah, I can understand that. And they have earned that capability. They've earned that celebrity. I understand that they also have respect for that celebrity as well. And I would like to say that there is an established difference between continued celebrity and being able to do what you're doing and pandering to being a sellout. There's a whole different story. I would love to have one of those conversations.
There is a different thing, but the parallel I'm drawing is, if Robert Plant was sitting around bitching and moaning and complaining because the Stones are making money still, but he's not making the same kind of money and doing the same kind of thing.
Right.
Because he chose his artistic endeavors, and the public just doesn't understand that. He chose to go his own way. He's not going to retread the old thing.
Right.
He's bitching and whining and complaining about that. That's where the problem comes in. That's where the entitlement comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're looking at you're looking at somebody who refuses to do what the Stones have decided is the proper plan for them to keep things working the way that they did, and then complains about it. Plant doesn't complain about it. He's made his decision to do what he does. He makes less money than he probably could make the other way, but he's okay with that. He's not bitching. He's not whining. He's not complaining. He's not blaming the fans for not, you know, for making it worse for him or anything. He's just like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Sorry, this is what's right for me and what needs to be done. There's no blame. And that's where I think this problem of the cancel culture comes in, is the celebrities who are basically being held accountable for what they're doing, right?
Right, right.
They are blaming the fans. They are blaming the public at large for being held accountable for these things, for being the problem in this situation. And the public at large, the fans, they're not the problem. They're the people that you are supposed to be serving with what you're making. They're the people that have made you what you are. So if they have a problem with what you've done, you need to figure out a way to either accept that they're going to have a problem and you're okay with what you've done or said, or you're going to have to figure out a way to get them back on your side.
I've got a question for you on that. When it comes down to that, like, what's the idea of someone who has some level of celebrity like that? Does that mean that no matter what they say or what they do, does that mean they're always on the job? Does that come with the territory? Like,
in a sense, yeah. I'm not against. It does come with the territory.
Yeah, I can understand the idea behind that for sure. You're a public figure, so any statement you make in public, you're on the clock.
That's why you have your Kurt Cobains. That's why you have your Chester Benningtons. That's why you have your Chris Cornells.
Well, that could be entirely something different too. Like, don't get me wrong on those, because those, I think I understand where you're coming from, because you're talking about the possibility of celebrity pressure, right? And whether or not somebody can take that.
Yes, the pressure that celebrity does bring is heavy, because it is something where once you are this person as a celebrity, yes, it permeates almost every part of you. There are celebrities that, and every part of your life, there are celebrities that try to make it not, and there's some that try to hide themselves as best as possible from it, with pseudonyms, with hair hanging in their face. I love Sia. With many different things, they try to figure out ways to have the different life between the celebrity persona and their real life persona. But what it comes down to is the cost of being a celebrity is the loss of your real life to some great extent. And the bigger a celebrity you are, the less of your real life that you get. And there are some people, there are some celebrities, they will tell you, had to take a step back from the normal celebrity life to get back on track with their real life and have, figure out what the level that they could be at. This much of celebrity, this much of my reality. So there are some celebrities that they can say and do things and people don't much care because of the level of celebrity. There may be a few people that are angry with it, but the campaign isn't as big.
Well, I'm a little confused, and I think there's a couple of things that I want to touch on with what you said, that I want to make sure that, as far as my personal interpretation of it, could be possibly something a little different. So the first thing is, it's hard to equate or hard to tie in the potential issues with mental health. And with suicide in particular being tied potentially to celebrity, who knows? I don't feel like that we have a solid answer on a lot of those situations. Is it potentially a factor in what may have happened? Possibly. I don't know.
I specifically picked those three names.
Yeah.
Because those three names specifically, all three of them cited that as personal problems that they dealt with. And I mean, Cobain's suicide letter, whoever wrote it, specifically notated that the celebrity issue was a problem. But all three of them commented very heavily about how celebrity was exacerbating their problems and how difficult it was to live a celebrity life. That's the reason I picked those three people.
Okay. Understood. As far as the other portion of this, the concentration of our conversation was towards cancel culture in general and how the balancing act of being a celebrity can get you canceled. Well, here's the issue that I take, okay? Somebody succumbing to an amount of pressure, and I don't mean suicidal, I mean having outbursts, mental outbursts, okay? Britney Spears shaving her head and ruining a car. It's just incredible controversy that's happening around her, I think, power of attorney or her conservatorship or something like that with her father, that's happening in current news right now that is like a big, big, big deal. And it may have happened around, it may have started around that time. That's entirely different than when somebody decides to be a piece of shit and say something, Quiet Riot. I think he ended up making an anti-Semitic comment on the radio, I think he dropped an N-bomb or something like that, and Quiet Riot's record sales just tanked immediately, and they ended up firing the guy over it. Kevin DeBro, yeah. I think, was the guy's name. And now that would be a technical example of cancel culture. I mean, they shut off the radio. They did all that kind of stuff. Another example of cancel culture would be the Dixie Chicks speaking out against George W. Bush when they were playing out in England, and they were canceled hardcore. Like, no more time on the radio, record sales dropped, the whole deal, right? But when you're talking about somebody doing something or saying something that's absolutely horrible, like being a bigot or anti-Semitic or predatory or being somebody that's a terrible person, and not being able to deal with the consequences of that, and then trying to blame your fucking fans for it, that is a whole different ballgame than the amount of pressure or what have you that may come from being a celebrity. Because it sounds like what you're talking about is, of course, there's like this, you're walking on glass or, you know, tiptoeing through a fucking minefield with some of these people. And that's absolutely true. Everybody is watching everything you say and do at any point, trying to take some kind of candid picture, whatever. That is the pressure of celebritydom in general. But when it comes down to whether or not somebody's trying to pick apart something you said because you were an asshole, that's a whole different deal, I feel, you know? Like,
not to them, though. Not to them. They don't feel it's anything different because they, again, they'll lump it all in with the celebrity pressure, and you can't be yourself. You can't, because they'll go into defensive mode. They can't admit the number of them. The ones especially that are using cancel culture as this thing where they're the victim of cancel culture. They don't see how them saying this thing is anything wrong, because they're their own person. They should be able to say and do whatever they want, when in fact they're not really their own person anymore. They've stopped being their own person once they've become the celebrity. And so to them, it's easily equated to them choosing one brand of something over another, or them, you know, making whatever silly remark that's meaningless. That to them, even a bad remark should be just as meaningless, because they're just a person doing a thing. They're not just a person anymore. Once they've gotten to that level of celebrity, once they are a celebrity like that, they're not their own individual. They're a part of something bigger. They are a part of almost a collective of the people that see them as that celebrity.
That is something that's definitely worth really noting, and I would feel may almost be the point of this entire thing. Celebrity or not, a human being is a human being, and they have their own lives, and they have their own experiences, and they have their own opinions. And that is important to know and understand. And sometimes they may say a thing or two that you may not like in general, or may personally disagree with as a principle. Certain parts and pieces of that are fine. But if this person says something that deservedly so a bunch of other people don't necessarily agree with so strongly to the point that they feel that they shouldn't even follow them or contribute to their status as a celebrity or contribute to them. Attention is money when you really think about it.
Especially in
a celebrity environment, attention is money. If you're not getting that, you ain't making money.
And I can break it down to you this way, okay? You know the urban legends of somebody opening a can of, like, Mountain Dew and finding a dead rat inside the can of Mountain Dew?
Right.
Reserve dead rat?
You know?
Okay, so here's the deal.
E. coli at a Jack in the Box or, you know, that kind of a thing?
Well, here's the thing. Let's say you are somebody who only drinks Mountain Dew. That's, like, your soda of choice.
Okay.
Like, back in my teenage years, when literally the only thing I would drink was a Pepsi, and if it was somewhere that offered Coke, I would go to a convenience store and buy a Pepsi because I wasn't drinking a Coke. I was that hardcore about my Pepsi drinking. if so, we'll use that as an example. If I open the Pepsi can and it's, you know, got a dead animal in it or something.
Right.
I may find myself never wanting to drink Pepsi again. We all know, whoever's been listening to this, you know for sure, how big of a fan of the San Francisco 49ers I am.
Yeah.
Huge fan of the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
Twice in my lifetime, I almost gave up being a fan of the 49ers.
Why? What were these examples? What happened?
One time because they had a player, they had a player who had been drafted by the team. And once that player started doing well, he became the reigning piece of garbage asshole in the NFL. And when he left the Niners and went to the Cowboys and the Eagles, he was still the reigning piece of garbage in the NFL. And when he was finally inducted into the Hall of Fame, which should never have happened for this piece of garbage, he made sure that he was inducted as part of the Niners organization and is in the Niners, he was actually inducted at the, well, not inducted, but he was presented with his stuff after the induction of the Hall of Fame at a Niners game where a bunch of Niners got injured and the Niners were destroyed in the game. And I firmly believe it was because his bitch ass was there in the stadium and he still tries to be connected to the team. And I absolutely hate this man for all the things that he says and all the things that he does. He loves him some him. I hate him some him.
Who is this?
And that would be wide receiver Terrell Owens.
Oh, really? I never paid attention to, like, I remembered hearing about T.O. all the time, and there were people that loved him and hated him. But
here's the deal, man. Here's the deal. If you ask somebody that you know is a 49er fan, if they like T.O., if they say yes, they're not a real 49er fan, and they're probably not somebody you want to associate with.
Good Lord, okay.
If they say no, they don't like T.O., that's a good person. Sorry, where I draw the line.
All right,
I draw the line on my Niners fans.
Understood.
I hated this guy so much because he was just the biggest asshole humanly possible. He was just a loudmouth, annoying crybaby. I still can't stand watching or listening to him to this day. He's one of like three people in existence right now that I can't even watch them do an interview or watch them talk because I will destroy my TV if that happens.
Okay.
And then less vehement was the day that the Niners signed Richard Sherman to the team. I was almost ready to, because Richard Sherman was a similar figure.
Well, he was a controversial
for his time
dude.
In Seattle.
Yeah.
But he has proven to be, he has shown that he has proven to be a much different person than what he was when he was in Seattle.
Yeah.
And he has won me over the years by being, I think that he was who he was in the environment that Seattle was, mm-hmm. which I blame on the coach. I terrible person, but the coach of Seattle, by the way, for clarity. Right. But he has become Richard Sherman has become an actual helpful part of the 49ers team, and even though he's not playing right now because he's injured, he's still a helpful part of the team. And the stuff that he also does outside of football is flipping amazing.
That's awesome.
It made me have a lot of respect for him because he wasn't superstar, look at me, like, you know, Terrell Owens was. so, and that's the thing is, when you have those moments happen to something that, I mean, and I'm sorry, man, you've known me for almost 20 years now. I'm sure there's never a point where you did not know I was a 49ers fan.
Yeah.
I wear baseball caps on a regular basis, and almost every single one of them is either a Niner one or some kind of geek culture one. I have an Avengers one, a Star Wars one. Recently got a Captain America one. I'm a little weird about wearing it because I'm worried people might think it's something that it's not, but still it's a fun cap to wear.
Captain Puerto Rico?
Yeah. I'm worried about that. But anyway, point being, I mean, I have 49er stuff all over my house. I'm looking at my jerseys right now. I have a tattoo on my arm. I mean, it's a big deal to me.
You live it, man.
I identify this with this completely. Don't talk to me on a day that the Niners are playing. I think last year they were playing on Halloween, and every time we'd go to it, I would take the kids up to a different house for trick or treating. I would be peering in to see if somebody was watching the game, and if they were, hey, what's the score? Because I couldn't go. I couldn't sit and watch the game. Got to take kids trick or treating. Because I'm a good dad. As much as I love my football, I am still a good dad. But believe me, if I saw the game was on, I'd be like, "Hey, what's the score? You a Niner fan? Hell yeah! What's the score?" So, you know, it means that much to me. But there were times when I was like, they had players on the team or a culture on the team that was not what I felt was representative of who I am. So it's similar to what we discussed again last week when you know, I had that moment of revelation when it came to the racial stereotyping of the different character ancestries, as the proper word is for D&D, right?
Yeah.
I had that moment, and the fact that I talked about that, the deep connection that you have with these characters. Well, people get that same deep connection with their sports teams. People get that same deep connection with the products that they use. I'm still a Pepsi guy, by the way. I'm not as vehement about it as I used to be.
Right.
But I'm still a Pepsi guy. There are these places and these things that we connect to as part of this group, and we can connect even further to it via social media than we ever have before. With Twitter, with Facebook, with Instagram, the thing I know nothing about, so hopefully I'm using it as an appropriate reference. We connect to these things in so many different ways, and it is immediate connection. We have this 24-hour news cycle that is literally updated within minutes all the time.
Yeah.
And we're connected to these things in ways, especially this year where we're at home and can't have as much human connection as we used to. We are connected to these things in so many different ways. They mean so much about them. I mean, when I'm meeting new people, the first thing I ask is what movies they like. Second thing is what music they like. Because to me, movies are such a huge part of who I am. There are people that, depending on certain movies, they say are their favorite movies. I literally might opt out of even really getting to know them very well, you know, just because there's certain things that I'm so connected to how people see and view movies, how I see and view movies. It's so important to me. It shouldn't have that importance. Nobody's made it have that importance but me. But because I've invested that importance in it, when something happens to any of those things, it means something to me personally. And that's what we're seeing in this. And a single person can voice their dissent and be seen by millions at that moment. And that's where, again, that's where this is, it's the same thing, but it's just so much more visible now. It's so much more there. And this is one of those realities that I'm noticing. It's more the older celebrities than it is the younger celebrities that are having the cancel culture issue, because these older celebrities are still trying to figure out the fact and still trying to accept the fact this is not the world that they grew up in.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a whole different world. It's no longer theirs. It's somebody else's world. You're just living in it.
Yeah.
And you need to accept the fact that every action is going to be scrutinized. Every action is going to have a reaction. Either you accept the reaction, like currently there is a fairly well-known movie star with a very distinctive voice and an equally distinctive mustache that just recently did a voiceover for a political ad and has received a huge amount of backlash for the political ad. You know, he's not necessarily trying to be overly partisan. He's more with what's being said. It's not necessarily attacking the other side. It's more of trying to talk about an ideal of what this celebrity wants to be behind.
Oh yeah.
But the backlash that has hit this celebrity is enormous. I don't remember him ever specifically speaking about politics. And even in this specific election, I don't remember him declaring a political party or saying anything about it other than doing this voiceover. But because of who he is, the movies he's done, the things he's been involved with, huge amount of backlash. And he really hasn't made any kind of response that I know of to the backlash.
He doesn't have to.
Well, he
wouldn't have to the entire time. He wouldn't have to. Like he is one of an increasing number of non-politically associated celebrities. Like, they avoid any type of political association or endorsement. We know who you're talking about. In case anybody doesn't know, just realize that this guy killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. Okay. So this isn't a comparison to the idea of cancel culture, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because
really?
you have these entire groups of people that have now said they are never going to watch his movies again. They don't want him to make any more movies. They want nothing to do with him anymore. And he has.
Fuck him.
You're right. He doesn't have. No. Here's. But that's just it.
Yeah. So this is kind of like the Dixie Chicks thing, right? Like, if you think, that's a whole different ballgame with the Dixie Chicks thing.
Hold on. Well, yes and no. The Dixie Chicks actually took a specific political stance and were very open about it. But even then, that's a whole different – I'll get to the Dixie Chicks in a second. What I'm saying here is your response was, fuck them, which is a great response. But here's the thing. Another celebrity, other celebrities would say these people wanting to cancel me, these people wanting to never watch my stuff again. This is messed up stuff, putting it up like this, setting it up like this. They're eating into my ability to make money. This is wrong. They shouldn't be able to do this. Somebody like Corey Taylor would say that because he has.
I'm curious. Okay, so I know you have mentioned him before. I don't even know what he said. Did he say something? Or did he just speak out against cancel culture at random?
He spoke out at random against it. There was nothing coming at him. He spoke out at random against it.
That just sounds weird to me. That's such an out-of-touch maneuver.
You would think so, yes. Anyway, point being, this actor who I got to ask, when did he kill Hitler and Bigfoot? I'm not even sure about that one.
Oh, man. Okay, so to clarify, that was a joke that super fell flat. And we're talking about Sam Elliott. We're talking about the political ad that Sam Elliott put out. That Sam Elliott voiced over that came out, I want to say, sometime late last week.
Yeah.
He is catching a bunch of shit for it, but which is dumb,
it's not dumb though, but we'll get to that in a second. What's the Hitler and Bigfoot connection? I need to know that.
He's literally in a movie. I can't remember what the name is. I think it's the same producer or the same director that did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Okay.
He did a movie called, literally the title, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. And Sam Elliott plays the title role.
Okay. I need to see this movie.
Me too. I still haven't seen it. It looks amazing. I think it's on Hulu.
Need to see this movie. Anyway,
Point
being, these people have every right to say whatever they want to say because they have their political leanings and they see that they identified with Sam Elliott. This is a guy who's been a Western star. He's played the manly man in things.
Yeah.
They identify him as this object of maleness, and hey, so do women. And so he has a public persona that people have attached themselves to. And many of these people are of a different political bent than what he did with his advertisement. So they have every right to be angry and express their anger that this is something that is not what they expected to be from the persona that he has crafted in the films that he has done and in the kind of public eye that he has been in, the things he's done when he's out in public. Now,
I don't necessarily agree with that assessment. I don't agree with the fact that I don't agree with them feeling that they decide that they have projected some political affiliation on somebody who happens to star in Westerns and somebody who happens to be a man's man actor turning around and saying, hey, this is a this specific political candidate that we have been talking about for the last 3 years is or is not a portrait of decency, and we need to move towards a realm of decency because this election is entirely different from everything else here.
No, you're adding too much to muddy the issue, sir. The issue. What this is this person is a representation of them and who they are. That's somebody they connect to as being a part or an aspect of them. Something that they love about him, something that they're connected to with him. And
this sounds like projection, like mad. It doesn't sound like an actual association, though.
What do you mean?
This sounds like who they saw him as what part they saw Sam Elliott as the parts he plays, not as the person he is. This sounds like something entirely different. Their association they assumed that Sam Elliott leaned toward a specific political spectrum.
That's not his fault. No, that's the whole point. It's not his fault. That's the whole point of all of this, sir.
Okay.
It's not necessarily his fault. That's the whole point of all of this. It's what the public's perception is. But the thing is, he would not have the career that he had if the public did not perceive him this way. If the public did not see him in the way that they did and spend the money to go and see the movies that he was in.
So does that mean that they have a right to does that mean that they have a right to think that he misled them? Because I don't think he misled them.
they have to, if they want to think that, that's what they can think, and they can say what they want to about it, and he can respond how he wants to, which so far hasn't been a response, and his response can be exactly what the response of Ron Perlman's response is, which is fuck him. That's been Ron Perlman's response with it. And Sam
Ron Perlman's another guy that did the same thing, didn't he?
And here's the thing. Here again, this is where it gets into the point of this. Ron Perlman, he has his beliefs. He says them. People, it doesn't jive with how people view him. People get mad about it and say something about it. His response is, fuck him. What has he done? He has lost fans as a result, but it doesn't matter. He's not going to whine and cry and say, oh, these people want to cancel me. These people want to say these things about me, and they shouldn't have the right to. He understands that that's the part of being a celebrity, is that people aren't going to be okay with what you say. Even if what you say is to us right, to them it may be the wrong thing to say, and they're going to say something about it. That group of people that has said something about it is going to say something about it, because they see it as reprehensible. Whether it is or not, it's how they view it. They have the right to say what they're going to say about it, because their support of him initially at any point was what gave him the status to have his voice heard, period. Same thing with Sam Elliott. Okay. All the support of all the people gave him the status where his voice would be heard, where him narrating or doing a voiceover for a commercial would have any kind of substance whatsoever. Because if people didn't know his voice, because he hadn't been in all the things that he had been in, he hadn't been as loved of an actor as he has been, people didn't know that voice, his voice would be meaningless as the voiceover of that. It wouldn't have any importance whatsoever. So, yes, they have the right and the capability to say what they want about it. And he has the right to respond by either whining and saying, oh, cancel culture, they're trying to cancel me for the things that I say and the things I believe in. Or he has the right to say, fuck them. If they don't like me for what I've said, that's their problem, not mine. And that's where the key in this is. That's where, again, this thing has been going on for probably longer than we can count, longer than we have record of, this idea of boycotting, this idea of being angry with what these celebrities say. And again, the only newness is having it on the social media platforms and so available, but you have the response. And the words cancel culture, using that is these people who feel like they're victimized by being held accountable for what they say. Is Ron Perlman have a problem with being held accountable for what he says? No, he's perfectly fine with it. He's secure in what he says, and he's going to do it. But you have other people who say different things. They start complaining cancel culture. They do certain things. They start complaining cancel culture. Why? Because they feel like they should be able to do whatever they want and not have to face any repercussion. Perlman will face the repercussion. He doesn't care, because he's still going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah, I am ultimately confused, because this sounds like it sits very much on a moral spectrum kind of a deal. And it also depends on how many of those people decide to assume to cancel you, and what moral spectrum they sit on. Like, what side are they on?
It's not a moral. It's not necessarily a moral spectrum as much as, I mean, look at the Dixie Chicks. Use them as an example.
Yeah,
they made their response to George W. Bush.
Yeah,
the country music base, who is conservative and would have been Bush supporters, right?
Right.
They said, we're not having that crap. Country music stations didn't want to play them anymore. People bulldozed their CDs again. This is a thing. We need a bulldozer. We really need a bulldozer. They wanted nothing to do with them. What did the Dixie Chicks do? Did they whine and bitch and complain?
No. They did do well. No, as far as whine and bitch and complain, no. Did they make a statement about it? Absolutely. There's a difference. Their statement was huge. Like, they caught some shit. They were all over Rolling Stone for that, man. Like, they ended up getting support from one side and absolute total annihilation of their celebrity from another.
And that's what often happens in these situations. And yes, you can possibly look into the moral aspect of it. And typically what you will probably find is the people that are being, that are trying to be canceled or boycotted because they did something morally, that they felt was morally right,
mm-hmm.
and seems to be morally right.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are much more inclined to take whatever consequences come from the things that they say or they do,
mm-hmm.
and roll with it and understand that's part of what it is. And the people that do things that are morally iffy or bad, they're the ones that typically are more often to complain about it being cancel culture, and they're being victimized for the things that they do. They're not allowed to make any mistakes. They're never allowed to do anything wrong. Yeah, you are. You just have to, you know, admit to the wrongdoing and apologize for it and then do better. But that's not what they want to be able to do. There is, there can be a moral implication for it, but what it comes down to is, if you're really looking at the morality of it, you look at the morality of the person that is dealing with it and the celebrity in themselves. And if they're screaming and yelling cancel culture, this is the battle cry that they have for, oh no, somebody's holding me accountable for the stupid shit that I did, and I don't want to be held accountable for it anymore.
Hmm.
That's what this is. And that's the thing is, this is nothing new. The method and the way that it's projected is new with the internet. This is nothing new. This is the age old thing of, you're going to be held accountable for the things that you do. And what's funny is, cancel culture is the celebrity version of this. But this is something that we have to deal with in our day-to-day lives with some of our friends, some of our family, when they make statements and you say, that just doesn't work. That just doesn't jive. I can't understand how you would feel this way about it. You know, this is just not okay. So you're going to tell me what I'm saying is not okay. You're going to cause problems over something like this. That's, you know, this shouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, you shouldn't be causing the problem over something like this. When you hold anybody accountable for the things that they say and they do, there's two responses. There's the people that understand, they are able to be held accountable and can answer for what they've done and feel like they've made a morally correct decision. And there are the ones that pin it on you and say that you shouldn't be able to hold them accountable for it. They should have the right to have whatever thought that they have without having to be held accountable in that way. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so this isn't something that's just the cancel culture is what you use in the celebrity circle for this. But this is part of living life is you do something, you say something, all of those things have a consequence. All of those things have meaning. And either you can take the consequences for it, or you deflect it onto somebody else because you refuse to be able to take the consequences for it. And that's all this is. That's all. This is the rallying cry of those who don't want to accept the consequences for what they do. And that's my bit on cancel culture. And guess what? If you don't like what I've said about it, that's all right. I'm okay with it. I'm not going to apologize, and I'm definitely not going to blame you for cancel culture, because honestly, who's going to cancel us? There's not enough fans to cancel us at this point. So does that help at all? Did I make it any clearer, or am I just leaving you even more confused?
I personally have a few questions, but I feel like I can elaborate on this a little bit more, but we are hitting a pretty good long time on this, and I'm not even sure the file is going to be small enough.
Well, then here's what I'd say. This can be something that we can revisit, especially as I don't see this going away. I see this as being something that people are going to be complaining, because the thing is, it's always been complained about. You've always had those people that will take the boycott and take the canceling, take being fired from jobs. You have those people who will accept it and understand that there's a consequence for the things that you do and say. And then you have the people who will always try to deflect it onto somebody else, because people don't want to take responsibility for anything, especially for the things that they do. It's always got to be somebody else's fault. You and me both, we know those people who constantly try to deflect
responsibility. We've all run into those people, for sure.
And you know, what it comes down to is, imagine those people that you know that deflect responsibility and don't want to have to deal with it, with like millions of dollars in their bank accounts and, tens of thousands of people following them on social media and talking to them, or hundreds of thousands of people and talking about how amazing and wonderful and great they are. How much more does that add to the problem of it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you already have people that have that personal entitlement issue, give them all that shit on top of it. The entitlement becomes massive and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking at. So anyway, if people are still listening with how long this damn thing is, where are they listening to us, Mike?
Well, you're probably listening to us on our website, thezenchronicles.com or zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N.com. Speaking of Zenchron, you could also find us on Twitter and on Facebook at that tagline. You can also check our podcast at pretty much all the other major podcasting stuff, as far as we know. Anyway, we're always trying to expand. We're on TuneIn. We're on Spotify. We're on Google, which will soon be, I think, Google Music is going away, but I don't know if Google Podcasts is going away. But if it does, then we're going to be on YouTube, which we already are on YouTube. So speaking of which, if you're listening to us on YouTube right now or watching this video on YouTube, make sure that you click the like button on the video if you dug it. Make sure you hit the subscribe button to the channel so that you're notified.
Even if you didn't dig it.
Even if you didn't like it. Click like anyway. Or yes, if you didn't like it, click dislike. Either way. But if we make sure you also subscribe to the video. And James, they got one more thing that they got to do. What is that?
Click the bell.
That's right. Click the bell to make sure you get notified of the next podcast we come out with. We do them every week. They come out on Thursdays. And I believe that is my spiel.
Yeah, and when you're on there, clicking that bell, because you got to click the bell. Clicking the bell is important. At least it isn't like all the videos I watch on YouTube. They always have a little thing that says click the bell on it. I'm the little thing saying click the bell. They're not really a little thing. I'm short, but fat, so that makes up for the short. Anyway, while you're there, check out Mike's two other pages. You have Ruling Note Music, where he talks about musical history stuff, music recording lessons, just everything music generated. And then also check out
The Musics.
Yes, The Musics, all of The Musics. And then go check out Chronosode Games,
yes,
which is a page that Mike and his wife do playing video games in chronological order of the story.
Yep.
I think they just you're just going to see the still waiting for the finishings of Luigi's Mansion, right? Still coming out.
Yep, we're slamming out Luigi's Mansion all this week. So it's going to be Luigi's Mansion videos all this week. And then we've got like double features on Friday and Saturday. Since Halloween is on Saturday, we're going to finish it all up on Saturday.
Nice. Of course, yeah, that takes up all of his time, so he doesn't have any time to do cool shit with me, because I understand it.
Well, I mean, it's not like we can actually hang out right now, James.
We can talk. We have phones. We have this.
We do.
But whatever. We can even play games online, but whatever, I get it.
Oh, dude, I got to show you a game. You're going to love this game.
Okay, we'll check that out then. Also, yeah,
it's called Among Us. If you're not playing Among Us, everybody needs to play Among Us. Oh, it's amazing.
God. Is that the one you're going to tell me about?
Yeah, the Space Whodunit.
Okay.
You have to kill people and then like convince people you're not killing them. It's great. You would love this shit.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, you have to tell me about it after we're done here. also, when you're on the YouTubes, check out that video I mentioned earlier. Tim mentioned Prejudice. Great video, great comedian. Love watching anything from the guy. We are not connected to him in any way, shape, or form, other than the fact that
we identify with the song.
And I identify him very much. And luckily, everything that he has said, I pretty much agree with. He's got certain groups that he has said some pretty inflammatory things about, and I kind of have to agree with him, especially his feelings on things like, I don't know, Catholic priests. Personal opinion.
Oh, I don't think I've heard this one.
I like
one.
What he has to say.
Yeah, I've only heard one song from him.
Oh, there's more. There's so much more.
I bet there is.
Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.